What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Occupation Nation podcast, where we try to help you answer the question of, what do I want to be when I grow up? I'm your host, Zach Horvath, and today on the show, we are talking to Andy Burkett about what it means to be a teacher slash coach. Now, with Andy, I wanted to get his take because he's an English teacher, and English, it ain't really my thing. So I wanted to see how it is to be an English teacher. Why did he pick English? And he's also a baseball and golf coach. And I wanted to see how is it that he juggles all the time management that goes into teaching and grading, but also being a dad as well as being a coach. I know it's got to be a struggle. Really interesting to hear his idea of what teaching means and why he's a teacher. So stick around for that. Also want to give a shout out to our sponsor of this episode, Sunny Scents Wax. If you're looking for some amazing scoopable wax to make your house smell incredible, head on over to Etsy.com/shop/Sunny Scents Wax to get you some today. Link is in the description, as well as our code to get you a little bit of a discount. Now it's time for our new segment that is the Fan of the Week. So shout out to PL Hub on Apple Podcasts for the review. It's great to learn about different occupations. Zach does a wonderful job getting to the nuts and bolts of different occupations. It's great to learn what preparation is needed to be ready for jobs and what it takes to succeed. Thanks so much for the review, and if you want to be a possible fan of the week, make sure to head over to whatever podcast app you have, if it allows reviews. Throw a review in there, and maybe one day I'll give you a shout out. So with all that done, let's get into the interview. How you got from being in high school to getting the occupation you have now. So okay. Take me on that journey.
Man, so my path to education was a little bit unorthodox. I graduated from Forest in 2007, went to UT Martin, had a decent time there, pretty good time. I majored in political science and minored in English. And my whole goal, like the whole time that I was in, you know, at college and everything else like that, was to be a lawyer. I wanted to go to law school. I wanted to do that. And I thought that was going to be my path. So, majored in political science, minored in English, was on this career path, like taking these classes. And I interned in a law office, took the LSAT, you know, was accepted into a couple of law schools. And then that summer when I interned at another law office in Dresden, it was not for me. I realized, I was like, man, this is not necessarily what I wanted to do. So I took one more extra year of school and kind of picked up some business classes as well. And then from there, like immediately out of college, I started working for Enterprise Rent-A-Car. And so I was completely in the business world. Worked there for about a year. Was managing my own branch.
Were you like kind of like a sales guy, or were you just like an associate? How does that work?
Yeah,
what were
you doing there? It was really a sales position. It started out as a sales position. A lot of those guys that come in with Enterprise, they start out as like an entry-level position. You work in sales, work your way up, and they'll give you opportunity to be either like the assistant manager of your own branch or, you know, a manager. And that's where I was. I was managing my own branch, and it was a job where, like, again, it was a great opportunity, especially like right out of college, to get an opportunity to learn how the business world works and things like that. But it was another one of those things where I didn't know if it was necessarily for me. It was like the first, you know, first job out of college. So after that, I started working as a healthcare recruiter. So again, a whole nother different realm of the business world where I would call people, basically see like, you know, and again, it was basically a sales job too, but call people, see if they're interested in working these technical healthcare recruiting jobs. So these people are like healthcare informatics, like really good at computers, really good, like hospital background, like either nurses or pharmacists or stuff like that, but they were really good at their computer job. So they wanted to do that as well. I worked there for about 9 months or so. And then that July, I guess that was the July of 2014, Coach Davey McLaren gave me a call and was said, I'm, you know, I need an English teacher. Know that you have a background in English. You know, if it's something you want to do, I'd love to have you. So I thought about it for a couple of hours and I called him back and I told him no, like immediately, like, no, I can't just quit my job like in the middle of a week and just decide I'm going to do, because we were like 3 days away from school starting. So I was just nervous. Like, man, I'm gonna do these kids a disservice. Like, it's not, I mean, I have no preparation. I have no education background. I don't know anything about education whatsoever. So like, I can't do that. So he called me back about 40 something times, like over the next like 24 hours, just basically just not taking no for an answer. And I'm really thankful he did, because like this is definitely my calling. This is definitely what I'm supposed to be doing, and really happy to be doing it as well too.
That's really, really interesting. So I think that's almost a common thing though, where you do something, you think that sounds cool, and then you're like, no, 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 this ain't for me.
Yeah, and it, and like I said, not to badmouth either one of those jobs as well too, it was just one of those things where, especially the healthcare recruiting job, like it was, you know, it's a sales job. Like you're going to sit at your desk, and like a lot of guys, like especially some of the guys I worked with, like they were masterminds. I mean, they were magicians at being able to talk to people on the phone and doing different things like that. And you know, for me, communication was always the most key thing. Like that's the thing I enjoyed the most, was actually talking to customers. But the job itself got to be the point where it was monotony. I mean, it was the
like
same
you said,
thing.
If it's not for you, it's not for you.
Right. Exactly.
And it's glad that it's good that you figured that out, and you didn't just like, oh well, I guess I'll just stick to it. You know.
Yeah, exactly.
And you might do you think you would have if Coach Mack didn't call you?
Well, I mean, my wife had a lot of pull with that as well too. She was the cheerleading coach at that time, and she was like, you know, you helped me like explain things to my cheerleaders. You helped me explain things to my students and things like that. She's like, I think you have a natural inclination towards this. But I mean, really, you know, I thank David McLaren every time I see him for really signing me up for that job. And, you know, in the role that we had to do after that too, I mean, he helped me get signed up for classes at MTSU, because at that point in time, like I didn't have a teaching license.
Right.
So I had to go into this whole new transitional field at MTSU, take basically 6 classes about essentially, you know, what are the foundations of how to become a teacher. And really that helped me get jump-started towards my master's degree. So, I mean, I really have a lot to thank Coach Mack for.
So you could piggyback off the degree you already had and transition that into a teaching degree? Is that true?
Exactly. So for anybody out there that's interested in teaching and doesn't necessarily have an education background, as long as you have 24 hours, in the state of Tennessee, as long as you have 24 hours in your content area about what you want to teach, you're technically eligible to be a teacher.
That's interesting.
Yeah, you might have to go through like the same process that I did. It was a transitional license. I think they changed it like a couple of years ago to a practitioner license. But now, as long as you have at least 24 hours in that particular subject, you can be able to go in and start teaching.
So, example, if I want to be a math teacher, you have 24 hours of college credits in that specific math major?
Yes, okay. Exactly. And there's some wiggle room. I'm sure with math, like considering how many different types of math subjects are out there, I'm sure there's some wiggle room. But yeah, as long as you get enrolled.
In a nutshell.
As long as you get enrolled into a program like I was at MTSU and they transition you over, you basically have like 3 years to get all those classes knocked out. So
you were working while doing that?
No. Well, yeah, I was working as a teacher while doing the same time. So, and on top of that too, like took a baseball coaching job. And so like had a kid. It was
a lot going on.
It was a fun time, but yeah,
dude, hey, you said a transition point. That's a lot of stuff going on, but
I think just for me personally, I think that I liked the idea of being a lawyer a lot more than the actual job of being a lawyer. And I think the reason for that was I was always inclined to, I liked being in a team atmosphere. I liked the idea of being a leader and doing different things like that, from, you know, working in my fraternity to playing baseball, to doing different things. I always wanted to be inclined towards a leadership position like that. But once I realized just the seriousness about some of the different cases, and especially the idea of like, you know, law school is going to be a really big, you know, step, but you have to really be dedicated to the idea, especially with the amount of money that you'd be spending for a graduate program like that. I just don't know if I was fully committed to it. And all the things that I enjoyed, you know, really in the team atmosphere as well too, really transitioned over to teaching. Once I got to be like the leader of my classroom, understand like these kids really depend on what I'm trying to do. I really took hold of that. I think just from a communication standpoint, that was the main thing that I was, you know, kind of inclined towards doing.
Why English?
Well, for me personally, I always liked English. It was one of my subjects that I was always better at, especially, you know, taking the ACT and things like that. English and reading always seemed to be my top two subjects. And when I got into it in college, you know, I was looking for something. I was going to be a government/political science major the whole time. And I was looking for something to see like, okay, what do I like? What's going to help me towards being a lawyer? What's going to do all these different things? And really, English just kind of fell into that minor for me. I ended up taking, I think, 28 hours in English, and I just loved it. I love literature, love writing. You know, writing in general has been a passion for me for a long time. And anytime that I still have free time, which is few and far between now, I still get a chance to try to write. And, you know, it was one of those things where I always just enjoyed that subject. And so I never thought I'd teach it. I'll be honest, like, I never thought that would ever happen.
But. So I asked you that question because No. Give me math all day long.
Right.
I can do that. English class, not, I didn't hate English class.
Yeah.
But I ain't signing up for English class.
No, I mean, that's a common thing, man.
See,
I mean,
ugh, like, God, writing and, yeah. and papers and, oh, gosh. I'm glad there's people like you yeah. because
well, I appreciate that.
Because I ain't teaching any right. English class, that's for sure. And I had great English teachers going through high school, but, I mean, shoot, even middle school. But no English for me. So thank goodness you do that. So I guess to back off of that, why baseball coaching?
To be honest, that was one of those things where, you know, when I originally took the job, Coach Mack had wanted me to really just kind of get my feet wet with just teaching. Like, he had no inclination for me to coach or anything like that whatsoever. And he said, you know, if you want to help out here and there and, like, just come to practice and see how things are going, that'll be fine. And I was like, yeah, that's no problem. Well, it got to be about October, and he was like, hey, I need a head coach for the middle school baseball team. I was like, well, here we go. I mean, this is a year of first, so why not? Let's do it. But for me, and I always loved baseball. It was a sport that I played, you know, really my entire high school career. It was something that I enjoyed more than anything. Just the camaraderie, the team aspect. You know, we were super successful for several years, getting a chance to play under Coach Hardison. And I like taking a lot of the ideas. I love the mental aspect of baseball. I mean, I love the idea that you don't necessarily have to be the most physically inclined person to still be able to find some type of advantage to beat your opponent. And I really, that aspect of it really, you know, really appealed to me. And getting an opportunity to not just coach and win and be successful and do all these things, but really just get an opportunity to teach these guys that the game of baseball is beautiful. You know, it's an amazing thing. And much like football, once it's over, it's over. Like, your career is over. You know, once you decide that you're going to hang up your cleats, you can play a slow pitch softball, but it's not going to be the same thing.
100%, man. I'm happy you brought up the idea of baseball being a mental part, the mental part of baseball.
Sure.
Because that's how I've always looked at sports, every sport, basketball, baseball, football. There's this mental side of it. And if you can tap into that, even if you're not the biggest, fastest, strongest, maybe you can turn your advantage, turn the tide your way a little bit.
Yeah. And I think that's the important thing about coaching too, is, you know, getting an opportunity to coach with Coach Joyce, a guy that, you know, was a mentor for me for a while now, and a guy that I got to watch play whenever I was younger. A lot of the stuff that we took from our older coaches, we've applied it. We've applied a lot of this new age stuff as well too. And I mean that in the sense of, you know, taking slow motion videos of our guys' swings, watching them pitch in different ways and being like, look, this is exactly what we're saying. You know, you can see now your body's tweaking at this point. You're dipping your shoulder this way. Your front side's opening up when you're pitching, doing different things like that. And showing these guys and using technology and different things gives them just that much of an edge in a game. It can make the difference between one run and you know, winning and losing the game.
I want to hear about your day.
Okay.
So I know you said that, you know, it's probably going to be a little different here and there.
Sure.
But just give me an idea of what it is you do.
Okay.
Let's say start of the year.
Okay.
What is your goal at the start of the year, and how does that change over the course of the year, and how do you implement that goal?
Yeah, so I think it varies from class to class. For me, I've taught four different subjects. I've taught English 3, which is your junior level English, honors, which is the same junior level English, but it's an honors, kind of a more advanced program. Same thing with that, with honors, seniors, and then English 4, which is just regular seniors as well too. I've taught journalism, and I've taught, AP Lit now. So those five different classes there kind of all bring something a little bit different depending on, you know, what the students need from me in that regard. For my seniors, which is what I'm doing now, I'm teaching all seniors, two regular senior classes and then one AP Lit class. On both of those, it just kind of depends on, you know, like I said before, what you want to accomplish. I teach really all of my seniors. I kind of thought to myself, I was like, okay, if I'm going to go to community college, or if I'm going to go to university, or if I'm going to go to a technical school, or if I'm going to go straight into the workforce, how can I apply this class to all of those things? And it's a tough thing to try to say, like, okay, I have four or five different types of students in this class that have all these different goals. What is the one thing that I can do in this class that's going to be, you know, really stagnant all the way across and stay the same no matter what, so that they all get something out of it? So really, from a goal standpoint, I try to develop the class to try to be as hybrid as possible, I guess, to try to make sure that all of them will get something out of it in one particular fashion or the other.
I've never thought of it in that way. I'll put it that way.
Sure.
Where you have this class of all kinds of different people. They're all there, well, because they have to, but Some of them, they're maybe higher, maybe lower than others, and that's just how it is. Mm-hmm. You have to teach and hit all of them. So that's a great point. How do you figure that out? What's the magic sauce in there for doing that?
Well, if there was a magic sauce, I would love to know what it is. But
you're just trying your best. Huh?
Yeah, I mean, what it comes down to is just, you know, I think one of the main things that we're scored on as teachers is our knowledge of our students. And I think if you don't know who it is that you have in your class, then you're doing yourself a disservice. You know them, know the background about these kids. Where do they come from? What is it that makes them tick? You know, there's like for me personally, you know, we spend about 5 minutes every Monday just going over Coach Burkett's Netflix pick of the week. Like just as something to tap into to say like, hey, everybody watches Netflix, you know, everybody listens to music. It's one of those things where I talk to them about contemporary music, contemporary movies, just to get us all on the same page and then try to transition that into whatever the English lesson may be for the day. And, you know, for me personally, as long as I can get them, if I can get that hook and I can capture their attention at the beginning of class, then I know I've got them for the most part. And the one thing that I learned more than anything else is that kids' attention is just non-existent. Mm-hmm. It's non-existent altogether. I think the more that you can be able to rotate activities in your class, studies say, you know, if you can be able to rotate doing something different for every 20 minutes or so, you can keep them hooked the entire class. Because for the one thing for me is like if I look up and I know I've been doing a PowerPoint for like 40 minutes. I know that I've been talking about this ACT strategy that we're trying to go over. I can feel it. You can look around and see like four or five kids' eyes glazing over. And it's one of those things where it's like I'm doing them a disservice. I'm doing me a disservice. Let's stop. Let's do something different. Let's get back on track.
Time's money, right?
Yeah, it is. It really is. True.
So you're wasting time at that point if no one's listening. But I've never thought of teaching in the way you're bringing it up. I'm not going to lie to you.
In what particular context do you mean by that?
In a way that it's more than just teaching kids stuff. It's more psychological because you've got to keep them engaged. You got to keep them learning. What's a class you want to focus on?
Let's talk about AP Lit. I love my Lit and composition class. It's a fun one. It's challenging.
These kids are Would you consider them the top of the class?
They are. It's basically the new seniors, honor seniors for the most part. And they are. And that's not to say that they carry that into the classroom either. These are hardworking students. I mean, they're high achieving students. They do what's asked of them. They do what they're supposed to do. And
there's nothing wrong with the regular class.
Sure.
Of course.
Not at all.
It's just, there's just a difference there.
They are. These kids are the highest scores on the ACT,
right.
They're the ones that are projected to, you know, be able to go to university level colleges, to be able to go on to grad school. You know,
right.
This is that type of thing.
So for you, does that allow you to do things you don't normally get to do?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the one thing too, that, you know, when I was teaching juniors, especially juniors used to be a tested area in Tennessee. And there's a very strict curriculum about what they want you to teach, or what, when I say they, I mean the state of Tennessee, and what they regard as, you know, being the necessary information for them to be successful. And the one thing with AP is that that really isn't out there. It's a very ambiguous test. The test that they take is three essays, and then they take a 55-question multiple-choice portion that is just insanely hard. I mean, I'll be completely honest. I tell them all the time, I was like, you guys are going to hate me when you take this practice test, because I took it and made an 88, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things for them. Like, they know the challenge of that. But at the same time, too, I think I'd say the reward is definitely worth all the work that
they're
going to
put
in. Because you could bypass one English class, you could bypass two, or be like one of my students that I had last year, and she was able to bypass three English classes, you know, at Trevecca, which is incredible.
Yeah, I mean, you're grinding it out now, but that's a way worthy investment. In terms of money, if you're going to college, that's money, man.
9 hours of classwork right there. So for me personally, the day starts and AP comes in there. We'll just use like today as an example. Today was good. The bell work that we did today, and it's just a bell ringer, and usually I already have these up on the board and they just begin working on it immediately, was one of those let's get you thinking type things. Let's get you thinking. Let's get you, you know, kind of going through the motions of what I want your brain to be thinking about that day. So today's bell work was a journal bell work in which they got an opportunity to write, you know, a little bit with a partner. And we were talking about optimism versus pessimism because we're studying a writer right now named Voltaire. And Voltaire was all about being just the ultimate pessimist. Like, this is what this guy was all about. He was, you know, in the 1700s where everybody's like, we should be optimistic. We should do this. We should do that. And he was like, no, I don't want to. I want to write plays where, like, people hate each other. And so we started reading this, and, you know, we were going to read this today, but I wanted them to really get thinking about the idea of being optimist versus pessimist. So I made them partner up. Make one person be the optimist, make one person be the pessimist, and I want you to write a conversation between the two of these people.
In that view.
In the view, and it's raining at a bus stop. Go. Hmm. So the creative writing process has got to go. You know, a lot of things have got to fire off. They've only got 10 minutes to get this conversation.
Is this a common thing you do? Do you do these type of bell ringers every day?
Sometimes we'll do like some of the journal bell works like that, where it's like,
you normally have something that when they walk in, there's something on the board
every day.
Okay.
Every day. Yeah. And it's just one of those things where, you know, I think the most, for anybody that's aspiring to be a teacher out there, classroom management is your number one goal. The second that you can get classroom management and they understand what your processes and procedures are, that's the most effective you're going to be, because you're not going to have bad behavior. You're not going to have students talking back to you. You're not going to have students talking amongst themselves, because they know that that's not tolerated in this class. Like, this is what we do when we get in here. You can talk to your friends whenever you leave and so on. Don't say that I'm not going to encourage discussion when we have it. But like, once you can get your processes and procedures put together, then that's when you're going to be successful. I think the biggest flaw for young teachers sometimes is they want to connect so badly.
They want to be like bros.
They want to be, and it's just, you know, you learn, especially in the coaching realm too, like, you learn that fine line of like, okay,
of being cool, but
understand
I don't want to say I'm the boss, but
right.
I'm the leader of this. So I need to, it's not my time to speak. When that's over, you guys can discuss.
Exactly.
So where do you get these bell ringers from? Do you come up with them yourself? Or?
A lot of them I really do.
Okay.
And most of the time what it is I kind of work the lesson backwards.
So you start with your bell ringer or whatever you decide to start with. So you go into your lesson.
Okay.
Is there any sort of outline that you try to do for each lesson? Do you have like a template, or do you just, depending on what you're teaching?
It does depend on what I'm teaching. Like, for instance, the rough outline of what we're doing now is we're studying a lot of writers, like, in a very rapid pace. So every day we're studying a new writer for the most part. And like, why was this guy important? Like, when you hear Longfellow, why do people say Longfellow is a big deal? Why is Wordsworth a big deal? Why is the guy that we read today, Voltaire, a big deal? And so we do the bell ringer. Bell ringer lasts about, you know, 10 minutes, maybe 15 minutes if I let them read them out loud or anything like that, rather than just turn them into the basket. And then we dive right into maybe like 10, 15 minutes of just some background information, some PowerPoint notes about, here's this guy, this is where he came from, this is what he was about, and here's some, just the highlights of his career. Also, by the way, this is going to be quizzed. Like, it's when we take the test, like, I'm going to ask you about where you went to college at. It better be on there. And that's just college prep. You know, that has nothing to do with any skills. It just has to deal with the fact that, hey, it was on my PowerPoint. It's going to be on the desk.
Which is a huge thing, right?
This
if
is.
The teacher writes it down or it's on the PowerPoint, it's important.
It is. If you can be able to write effectively, and this is just for me personally talking, I think if you can write effectively, I think if you can speak effectively, but more than anything else, if you can be able to read something and analyze and comprehend what is actually going on, it doesn't matter what subject you're studying, you're going to be successful. You could be a person that's, you know, a history major, and as long as you can be able to read the Constitution and understand exactly what it was that these framers were trying to say, or the reason why Jefferson wrote certain things in the Declaration of Independence, then you're going to be successful. Reading analytically like that is by far the most important skill, and that's primarily the main thing that we focus on in AP Lit, but my other classes as well too.
How and why do you determine who to pick? Like, is there certain things that draw you to people? Is it people you like? Or how do you pick those people?
I think for me, when I've got the freedom to make my own curriculum, mm-hmm. like the way it is, like with this, I think the first thing you start with is, okay, we're going to learn about these guys right here for sure, because I love this stuff. Like, I love learning about this. And when it comes to Shakespeare, like, that is my bread and butter. I mean, for AP, we learn five different Shakespearean plays. We study three comedies and two tragedies. And it's one of those things where after a while they're like, Coach Burkett, like, you're wearing us out, man. Like, you're wearing us out with this Shakespeare. I was like, guys, you just don't understand. He's the GOAT. Like,
yeah.
He's the GOAT. Like, this guy invented 20,000 words to our language.
That's nuts.
It is. I mean, I don't even, I don't think I know 20,000
That's
words.
Impressive, yeah. Man. So. So it, and if you love it and you're teaching me about it, I'm going to feel your love, right?
And that was probably, that was my next point was that, like, man, for me, if I know that I'm passionate about something, and this works on the flip side too, I'll allude to that in a second. Like, if I'm passionate about something, you're going to feel it. Like, I'm going to be excited. I'm going to be like, hey, look, y'all ever, you know, watch House of Cards on Netflix? They're like, yeah, this is the show about the president. I was like, yeah, that's Macbeth. Like, it's the same story. They stole the whole thing. Have you ever watched Sons of Anarchy? That's Hamlet. You ever watched The Lion King? That's also Hamlet. Like, and once they realize they can make that connection, it's like, oh, wow, that's interesting. I've watched Lion King my whole life. On the flip side, stuff that I know that they have to learn that I absolutely hate, that I despise, like anything Bronte sisters, Wuthering Heights, Jane Eyre, any of that stuff at all. No, see, exactly. I will double time it. I'll be like, I will be a cheerleader. I will be an actor, and I will double my excitement to be like, you've got to be excited about this. And that goes into, I learned that my first year teaching. If the kids know you hate it, they're going to hate it.
Oh yeah.
If you're excited about it one way or the other, and they can feel your excitement, then they're going to buy into it a little bit more than they normally would.
Well, if you're talking about Wuthering Heights, and I know that's coming up, and I'm like, oh no, but if I see you kind of getting hype about it, I'm like, oh, well, he thinks it's cool, so maybe it's okay, right? You know? So it's a psychological thing, yeah. Again.
When it comes to reading, we read a variety of novels, we read short stories, we analyze a lot of poetry. And the main thing about that is, and again, I get the question from students all the time, like, what is the purpose of this? Like, what is the purpose of us, you know, analyzing poetry and doing different things like that? And really what I always fall back on is, if you can be able to analyze a poem and something, and it's so intimidating to students because it's such a small amount of words that has to have so
that's
much
so
impact.
Heavy,
it's
right?
Got to be something one way or the other. If you can be able to analyze that, then you can be able to analyze any type of problem-solving situation that you're going to be in whenever you get into your job. Your boss is going to come to you and say, your sales numbers were only at 10 this week. It needs to be at 12. You may not have a job anymore. So how are you going to problem-solve that and be able to analyze that situation and figure out how to get, you know, in a better realm of where you need to be at? So I think anything that's real-world application is really important as well, too.
I keep comparing math to English because in my head that's how it works, and I want to hear how you say this. All right, you do the math problem and it's wrong, okay?
Okay.
Right, it's just wrong. You did it wrong.
Sure.
If in English I think they mean this and you think not that, how do you answer that when, like, what's the answer to that? How do you deal with it?
Yeah, that might be the funnest and most, like, tough thing about being a teacher, or being an English teacher in general. There is so much, I guess ambiguity would be the word to use, about, like, what something could mean one way or the other. It's the same way, like, if we were to listen to a song, like, you could get an entirely different perception
right.
of what I'm gonna get. I think the main thing to fall back on is they have to understand a context of who that writer was. You know,
that's fair.
What was their purpose of wanting to write this in the first place? You know, a play that we just got done studying a few weeks ago is The Glass Menagerie by Tennessee Williams. And he wrote that play as basically, you know, as a storybook for his own life. And he put these characters into the play that was him and his mother and his sister, and how he really did abandon his family to go off and become the amazing writer that he was. But there's a certain part of him that always felt like, I let my family crumble. So he writes that play as a tribute to them. And the symbolism that you're talking about, like, the symbolic of how literally sad this man was writing this play because he let his entire family down.
So it does fall into reading more than just the words.
It is.
You got to know what they're doing, how they're feeling. Does that come with knowing the writer, or does that come with researching, like, the history of the writer?
I think it's a little bit of both. And then the idea of being able to apply the strategies that I'm trying to teach you.
Mm-hmm.
And I say this all the time. I'm sure my students get so sick of me saying it, but interact with your text. If I'm making you read something, ask yourself, dude, why is the author saying this? Like, what is the purpose of him saying this? Like, what is the point? Where is this going? And especially for, like, things like the ACT, which is what we're really working on and harping on now to get students to do better on the reading portion of the ACT test. What is the overall thing? As I'm reading this, let me make notes in the margin, like, okay, he's going to come back to this. He's alluding. He keeps mentioning this over and over and over again. Why is this so important? And then the big reveal happens, and it's like, there's that light bulb aha moment where you're like, as a teacher, that's the most glorious thing.
If you really want to get into it, it makes it so much better. Listen to me. Coming from a guy who doesn't care as much about English as Andy does.
Right.
Doing and reading the way he's preaching is worth it. Because I read more books now than I ever did before. Mm-hmm. And it's not because I like sitting in my bed and reading a book. It's because I love going into these places, understanding what they're saying. And that just blew my mind in high school. I was like, sure. Gosh, I got to read Scarlet Letter. You kidding me? You kidding me? But nowadays, right. It's like, oh, man, I know exactly what was happening there.
Yeah.
Like, that just blows your mind. So how do you deal with juggling teaching, coaching, family?
It's, I think the one thing, and just alluding back to Coach Mack as well, too, the one thing that he used to say all the time is like, you know, once you decide to do this, like, you're going to wear a lot of hats, you know? And I realized that, too, once I became a teacher, that, like, things change from, like, different periods in the day. You change. Like, you change as a person as far as that's concerned, like, how quickly things have got to go. I am not the same teacher first block that I am when I teach third block. And I know I'm going to teach the same thing, but it's not necessarily the same. You know, if I've got to switch gears and know that, okay, like, this class is much bigger, I've got to be more on my game, I've got to be able to pay attention to what's going on in the class more as far as classroom management is concerned, got to wear a lot of different hats. I've got to be able to amp up that, you know, that teaching whenever it comes to AP, like, get ready, let's get it college level. We got to get up. We got to get higher on the spectrum of what we need to learn today. And then the same thing with the baseball field. Like, the second that I step into the field house and put my baseball hat on, like, it's the literal and metaphorical baseball hat. Be like, it's time to become a baseball coach. Like, all the stuff that happened with English, like, let it go, because these guys deserve your full attention now. And then the second you step out of that, you get in your car and, like, you try to decompress a little bit and drive home and
leave it at the door, right?
Yeah, be a dad, be a husband again.
Yeah, exactly. So what's the hardest one of those three? Put you on the spot.
That's a good question. Being a dad's definitely the most difficult, for sure, because I think the thing is that my son is 3 now, and my daughter was just born in December. And I think for me personally, like, I am very passionate about what I do. Like, I love teaching. Like, if I have a bad lesson, I'm gonna sit back and think, like, what did I do? Like, what did I do to get to that point to where it went so poorly?
Well, you're a competitor.
Right.
It's this competitiveness about you that you want to do the best every time, right?
True, true. And then the same thing with the baseball, too.
Yeah.
We lose a game by one run. Like, was that on
you're
me?
Like, what did I do?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Where did it change, right?
Exactly. And the thing is now is that I see that competitiveness come out, and, you know, I want my son to be successful in all these things that he do. But more than anything else, I want to be able to have the opportunity to spend time with him. And, you know, for me personally, like, I, once it hits baseball season, like, we're on the road, 3 road games a night usually, or 3 road games a week. And, you know, it's one of those things where the juggling act of teaching the kids, the 30, 40 kids that I'm responsible for in my classes versus the 25 guys that I got on the baseball team, and then the 2 that I care the most about in the world, you know, how do I apply all that time to them? And I think it's just, you know, one, I have an amazing wife to be able to rely on, to be able to help with, but she relates to that. You know, she's a cheerleading coach too, and I think that's the greatest thing about that, is that she understands where I'm coming from, when she knows that, like, you know, something on the baseball team is troubling me, or something in the English classroom is troubling me, and she knows where it's coming from there. And I think just more than anything else is just having effective time management. Like,
I was gonna ask, so how many hours do you think you put in a day? I mean, you get to school and then you leave after baseball practice.
We're talking get there at 6:30, 6:45, leave maybe 5 o'clock,
yeah.
Maybe 6 if you want to get a workout in before going home.
I figured it was it's a commitment.
It is. And that's even more if you have a game, you know, if you have a game that night,
that's like 8 or 9,
yeah,
right?
And start till 6, you know, you're probably not getting home till 8 or 9.
Or it's away and it's a 2-hour drive, then you're not home till 11.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it is.
So if you're looking, if someone out there is looking to be a teacher and coach, like, if, for me, I'll be honest, that's what I was going to do. I was going to be a teacher and I was going to be a coach.
Sure.
I didn't do it because I felt that I wouldn't love it.
Mm-hmm.
I was afraid I wouldn't love it.
Okay.
So I went engineering, and if I hated engineering, I could fall back.
Sure, yeah.
That's
absolutely.
That was my idea.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe I'll be a teacher one day.
I don't know. I think you'd be a good one.
I don't know, but that was always helping kids, man. That's cool.
It is.
That's cool stuff.
That's the reason why we're here.
I mean, that's good stuff.
Yeah.
Does the monotony of teaching the same thing every year get old, or do you ever feel that monotony?
Well, it's my fifth year teaching now, and this is my... I'm teaching something different. Like I always try to find something new. I always try to find something new to teach every year. Now I have my favorites that I love, and granted, I'm only 5 years in. I mean, 15 years from now, I could be, you know, telling something different. But, you know, for me personally, I think that, I mean, the things that I love and the things that I enjoy to teach, I always do because, and I think this goes back to the idea of what I alluded to earlier. Like when you're a teacher, I think if the best teachers that I've ever seen were really good actors. And I mean that in the sense of like, you've got to be able to convey, you know, not necessarily excitement. It's not about being like a rah-rah cheerleader or anything like that, but the idea of being able to go in and understand that when you put on a good lesson, you are putting on a performance. It has all these moving parts. It has all these different things. You have to set the lesson up. You have to deliver it. Then not only that, you have to double check and make sure they understood what you were actually saying. And I think that's for me, you know, what breaks up the whole monotony of like teaching the same thing over and over and over again. Because for me, like I'll teach it one time in a semester, unless it's like an extended play where we're going to learn for it about a week. And then I won't talk about it again until next semester, you know? So you constantly have to have all these different things, especially in the context of teaching English, like where it's like, okay, we're doing poems today, and then next week we'll be learning about a novel, and the next week after that we're writing an essay, and the next week after that we're having you put together these presentations. Like, it's never really the same thing over and over and over again.
How do you compare teaching in a classroom to teaching on the ball field?
Sure. I think there's a lot of relatable things that go to it. Some of the best coaches that I've ever met or learned were teachers, and one person I can think about is Tim Corbin, baseball coach at Vanderbilt. Every day before he takes his guys out there, they have a classroom session. And like that could be anything from like, guys are going to learn how to do the proper handshake today. Like that has nothing to do with baseball. Like it's life 101. Like he's preparing his guys for life as far as that's concerned. He does things such as like, let's look at some videotape of what happened in the scrimmage last week. Let's do this. Let's do that. And it could be anything. It's just 30, 40 minutes to take his guys, just to take a moment to sit back and be like, let's get away from the physical aspect of baseball and let's look at it in like a mental approach. And I think for me learning from him as well too, I always try to take some aspect of teaching and put it into baseball. Like you want to be encouraging, you want to be all these different things. You want to give them examples about things that have happened to you in the past. You know, I think anything that you can
feel relatable, right?
Right, exactly. I think is really important, but more than anything else, the one thing that I've taught or that Coach Joyce and I both really have kind of really, I guess, fallen back on more than anything else in our coaching strategy is that not every baseball player is built the same. You know, and again, that's usually how it is with many sports. There's many different positions out there. But in baseball, you can win so many different ways depending on how things go. Like, you can be a guy that's 150 pounds, that's, you know, 5'6", 5'7". But if you can fly, we can find a place for you out here. If you can get on base and score runs, we've got those two big guys that are going to knock you in. Like, it's going to be fine.
Right. Everybody's got a role.
It is. And for me personally, and from the baseball perspective, I'm the pitching coach. Like, I handle, you know, most of our defensive scouting report. I take a look at tendencies from the other team. You know, I look at what this guy struggled against. You know, he struggled against the fastball with us last time. Let's go after him this way. So a lot of the scheme, a lot of the strategy that goes into that is really up my alley. And Coach Joyce handles a lot more of the offense, setting the lineup. We both kind of helped together with defensive alignments. We were able to bring Corey Bishop onto the staff this year. Great guy. He's been awesome with us so far, really learning kind of our tendencies as coaches. And I think the main thing that's been successful is just I can't harp on this enough, but just the camaraderie of the coaching.
Definitely.
They have to get along. I mean, Coach Joyce and I and Coach Bishop, we get along. Like, I think that goes when the kids understand that there's a camaraderie between you, there's a true, real friendship between you. It's not just because we're being forced out there to coach together type thing, that we really enjoy coaching together type thing. I think that's what makes us more successful more than anything else.
So, do you enjoy the baseball coaching or English teaching?
Really, I'm a teacher.
Okay.
I'm a teacher tried and true. And I really thought that originally when I was getting hired for that job, I was getting hired to be a baseball coach that also teaches English. And I hate getting that perception, too. Because you know how it is. You know how the perception is with male teachers that coach. Like,
it's like, oh, he's... he just sits around, does nothing all day, and then right. he goes and coaches.
The perception is that he's a coach that also teaches. And for me, I don't ever want to be in that category. I mean, for me personally, I want to be known as someone who is a teacher first that happens to also coach baseball. Because I love baseball. I love what I'm doing. But at the same time, too, there's about, 40 kids any semester that are dependent upon me to be prepared for college or to be prepared to go into the real world. I would love to get 40 guys prepared to be able to play college baseball, but it's just not a reality. So I do. I take the teaching aspect of that really serious.
What do you think is the best first step? And that could be in high school. That could be in college. Where do you think people should start making their way down the path of being a teacher?
Okay. The one thing that I would say is in the idea of majoring in education, what I would do is first and foremost, like if you're going to decide in college that you want to be a teacher and it's one of those things that you want to do, the first thing that you need to do is get signed up and get into an education program. But secondly, you need to figure out what your content knowledge is going to be. Like, what is it that you actually have desire to teach? If you're in the education program now, and again, it could be different because like I said, I never went down this path in college, but now you have to student teach for a full year, which is like, I mean, that is insane. Like, that's a lot. Think about that. That's free labor for like a whole year when it comes down to it.
Yeah, literally.
It is. But, and you can't work. Like, you can't have like a side job. Like,
right. You are working.
Yeah,
right?
You are working. So, and once that happens, then you have to pass your series of what they call praxis test. Praxis test is like basically your content knowledge for English or history or, math or whatever it is that you're going to teach. And once you pass all that stuff, then like, you're good to go.
In your opinion, to be a successful teacher, what does that mean to you?
That's a great question. And that's the one thing, I think I probably talk about this too much in my class, but when I talk to my students, like, I want them to know that, like, I really love doing this. Like, I really love being up here in front of you guys. Because I remember at one point in time of when I got in my car and drove to work every day and dreaded it. Like, I didn't want to go there. I didn't want to be there. I didn't want to do this. I didn't want to do that. Like, I would literally drive with the music off in my car and be like, I hate this job. I can't stand it. And I never say the word hate. I try not to say the hate. Like, say
you
that
very much it. Dislike your
yes,
job.
Big time. And so I told them, I was like, guys, I wake up every morning. I was like, I can't wait to get here. Like, I can't wait to get here. And granted, there's some things that I teach that aren't, my favorite thing in the world. But I was like, I really love it. I think the main thing, and again, I'm still a young teacher, so this could change. But for me right now, is I'm very passionate about my job. I love the idea of being able to have the opportunity to inspire these kids to be able to find something that maybe they weren't good at before, to make themselves feel better about understanding something, to try to show them that, like, even though you may have failed this test or even though this may happen, like, there is growth there. Like, you were definitely getting better as a student than whenever you stepped in here. But more than anything else, like, I take the responsibility of, especially now that I teach all seniors, that they depend on me. Like, they really depend on me to make sure that they are prepared for their future. Like, I love the idea that I still get emails from former students saying, like, hey, will you check this paper out? Like, it's nine times out of 10, it's fine. Like, it's perfectly fine. But just the vindication of knowing, like, okay, I did my job the right way, if they still want to know my feedback, if they still want to know what's going on there. And kids are, they desire that type of thing. Like, they want to know what you think about certain things. That's why I always, like, they give me just tons of crap all the time about when I'm late returning essays to them. Because when I return essays, I'll grade them, but there'll always be comments like, this is how this could be improved. Like, you were really good doing this, but, like, try to maybe go in this direction.
Which is so useful. To me, being a nerd, that's super useful.
It is.
Especially in English.
Yeah. And it's tedious. Like, it can, it could take up to 15, 20 minutes to grade one essay.
What is grading like? Being an English teacher, I mean, I can't imagine the time you just dump into grading stuff.
Yeah, it's insane. Sometimes we do a variety of normal, like, daily quizzes, which are not too hard for me to grade and get back in a timely manner. We do unit tests, which could be anything from like studying poetry to studying a novel, or we're studying a play, or we're studying this or studying that. And I can usually get those back in a timely fashion. If I assign a paper, like, I know, like, okay, I got to take at least 10 of these home tonight or else I'm never going to get them finished. It's just never going to happen type thing. And when you couple that with the fact that you're also coaching a sport where 5 days a week you're going to be out there from 1:30 until 5 for just practice, and then couple that with, like, two or three games a week as well too, or weekend tournaments. It is, that is by far the most demanding thing about being both a teacher and a coach. And again, for anybody out there that wants to become a teacher or coach, understand that, you know, if you're teaching English and coaching at the same time, like, you have got to have some type of system together to know from just a time management perspective, so that you just don't go insane, because it is definitely the hardest thing.
You will drown in papers to freaking grade.
And it will, and it'll back up on you too.
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, you'll be like, it's time for me to assign another paper. And it's like, well, I didn't finish grading the other ones yet. Like,
yeah.
It hasn't happened. So I think you just have to pick and choose your battles. You know, you only want to do, for me personally, I do about 4 big papers a semester for each one of my, you know, regular
English
classes.
But that's times 4 or times 3, right?
Yeah, times 3 classes.
So.
Yeah. No, for AP, we've written, oh my gosh, I think we've written 12 essays this year so far. It's a lot, yeah.
That's a lot to write, but a lot to freaking grade.
It is. One, I'm just thankful for where I am, like getting the opportunity to be able to do what I'm doing now. Definitely passionate about it. Definitely love the kids. And, you know, like I said before, I can't wait to get to work every day. And again, that's another piece of advice for anybody that's an aspiring teacher out there. Your first year, it will get better. I promise you. Okay.
That's a common answer.
Yes, it will get better. Because you really are, like, you're learning what you're going to teach, and you're going to learn that lesson yourself that night. And then you're going to teach it to them the next day. You stay like one day ahead of the kids for the most part. And then you have all these quizzes and tests and assignments built up.
So it's just another thing you got
to
do.
So you're ready to go. But for me personally, when I decided to take over and like, I was like, all right, I'm going to be a teacher. Like, what is my style? Like, what am I going to do? I modeled it after my 3 favorite professors at UT Martin. And I liked those guys because they were all 3 different from each other. Like, what did they bring to the table that was different? What did they bring to the table that was interesting or anything else? And I've stolen some different teaching strategies, like showing YouTube clips of certain things, like to get them, you know, riled up. And that's what one of my professors did. But one of them just spoke to us like we were adults all the time. He just spoke to us like he wasn't going to take any crap from anybody. That was the main thing. It was like, once you figure out what your approach is going to be, apply it every day. Like, try to stay consistent with it as much as you possibly can.
Would you say coaching is worth it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just from
I figured, but I had to ask.
Yeah, it is. And just from a competitive aspect, I mean, like, I tell the kids this all the time. Like, you guys, don't get me wrong. Like, I love teaching, but like, when we step out on this field, like,
this is everything.
I'll take one of you down, like,
yeah,
right now. Like, I would love to, like, get on the mound and strike one of you out. Like, I know that my shoulder will fall
off. It's just in your blood, man.
It is. And I think that's the main thing that we carry too. I tell the kids this all the time. Like, we get like a tough loss or something, and it's like, guys, like, I hate losing. Like, I hate losing way more than I love winning.
Oh.
And they know. Like, they know. Coach Burkett's not laughing anymore. He's not smiling about something. Like, he's being serious. And, like, this is, like, guys, we can't lose. Like, this can't happen again. Like, I don't want to feel this way all night long.
Exactly.
Because you can reflect on that as a baseball player. Bad loss. Like, you think about it all night.
The biggest win, it does nothing on a simple loss for me.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's just a feeling that you can't describe until you get it.
Yeah.
When you try your best and you lose, or worse, you don't try your best and then you lose. And
right.
You're like, I mess this up.
It's the feeling of the ultimate feeling of what could have been, and it will linger with you forever. I mean, like,
I think it should.
Yeah, it is.
A competitive way,
it's like
you should dwell on it.
Right.
You should care.
You should learn from this.
If you're going to be out here competing, then you shouldn't just, not everybody gets wins and trophies.
Exactly.
All right, man. Well, thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah, no problem, man. Absolutely.
I learned a lot. You've enlightened me in the teaching realm. Because you think of a teacher, you're like, yeah, they're just here to, you know, cut a paycheck sometimes.
Right.
But it sounds like you ain't that way.
Man, I appreciate that. I appreciate you having me on as well, too.
And that'll do it. Thank you all for listening. And thank you so much to Andy for coming on the show and talking about your occupation. If you guys want to learn anything else that I didn't cover, be sure to email me at occupationpodcast@gmail.com, or you can follow us on social medias at Onation Podcast. And I want to try something new. Take a screenshot of you listening to the show and tag us in it, and I'll be sure to repost and do all that good stuff on the social medias. Now, if you're driving, don't be doing that. Just wait till you stop driving and then take your screenshot and tag us in it. So thanks again to everybody. Be sure to subscribe and review. Reviews really, really help us out. And thank you all so much for doing those. So with that, maybe, just maybe, teacher is the occupation that you've been looking for. Thanks, and we'll see you on the next one.